Hello, this is Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, October 11th, 2018. Shining moment. Somehow she finds time for two demanding jobs. Jenny Amos is often compared to Hermione Granger of Harry Potter fame because of her ability to fit many activities into a day. It's almost as if Central Illinois Business 40 Under 40 Woman of the Year has a time turner, the device Granger uses for time travel, admiring colleagues say. Amos has been the University of Illinois Director of Undergraduate Programs in Bioengineering, been promoted to Senior Lecturer, and is now an Associate Teaching Professor. She now also serves as Director of Assessment and Evaluation at the New Carle Illinois College of Medicine, where she has been taken a leading role in developing curriculum and assessment. Although it meant splitting her time with bioengineering, where she'd been for 8 years, Amos decided the offer was too good to refuse. "I spoke with my mentors, and they all agreed that this was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity," she said. "I have been working across both programs since then, and it's been a great experience since both programs have overlapping content and benefit from each other." U of I Professor Emeritus Michael Hershey is a fan. Amos's nomination said she has taken the educational objectives for bioengineering, where nearly a third of the students continue on to medical school, and helped redesign medical school to focus on leveraging these students' background to accelerate learning of medicine and to produce future doctors with different ways of thinking about medical challenges. Throughout the development of the engineering-driven medical curriculum, she has also identified new ways to merge physiology and medicine back into her engineering courses. "This effort will fundamentally transform the role of the bioengineer in medicine and simultaneously prepare future medical doctors for a high-tech big data clinic." As a girl, Amos, 36, liked space and thought about being an astronaut. "I was really interested in science. It kept my interest all through school," she said. Amos's first high school job was at a deli. Her first engineering job was at a factory where she did research and development on candles. "I looked like I was having a seance all the time," she laughed, "but I smelled amazing." Amos received her chemical engineering degree from Texas Tech and her PhD in chemical engineering from the University of South Carolina. She joined the U of I in 2009 as a bioengineering department lecturer. Amos is co-founder and faculty advisor for Engineering Ambassadors at Illinois, which is part of a nationwide effort to inspire middle and high school students to challenge conventional ideas about science and engineering. She discovered her love of education as a seventh grade science teacher. She's been surprised by her profession's rapid evolution. "Everything I learned in college has pretty much changed now," she said. "Education has changed so much in the last few years, I don't know what to expect." There is a push for online learning that wasn't there when Amos was in college. She has no model to follow and she gets ready for upcoming classes. "It seems like a new job every year," Amos said. "I have a lot of joy in learning. I love the opportunity it's given me to travel." One of her favorite locales is Sierra Leone, where she goes annually as the principal investigator on a capacity-building grant at Nala University. She partnered with startup Invoke Health to create and implement electronic medical records for the West African nation. Police, two groups behind violence. Pastor wants to call out leaders to meet and put together a truce. A significant rise in gang-related gun violence in recent weeks had Champaign's police chief issuing a desperate plea for help from the public Wednesday. "None of this is random," Anthony Cobb said the day after shots were fired at the Oakwood Terrace townhomes in the 1000 block of North 3rd Street around 9:30 p.m., leading to the arrests of William Lewis, 19, of Champaign, and James Borden, 30, of Urbana. It was at least the third shooting incident in Champaign-Urbana in 3 days. "We believe this is retaliation," Cobb went on to say. "We believe this increase may also be connected to recent releases from the Illinois Department of Corrections. We know it's expanded and innocent people are going to be hurt bad. So if you're part of the family of one of these people, you're at risk yourself and everyone else is also at risk." Cobb spoke to local leaders at Wednesday's meeting of the Champaign Community Coalition. The regular agenda for the monthly gathering was scrapped in favor of a two-hour discussion devoted entirely to gangs and gun violence and what to do about it. Champaign police believe the recent rash of incidents is connected to a rivalry between two groups. The incidents include two on Sunday evening, one that left a man with a gunshot wound in the arm, another a drive-by shooting that left a family of six, ranging in age from 1 to 71, caught in the middle at their home on West Eads Street in Urbana. No one was hit, despite police finding 40 shell casings in the area. Cobb said police have increased patrols in the area where shootings have occurred, but he has quick to add Wednesday, a beefed-up police presence may not be enough of a deterrent. Last night, we had an incident where we had officers around, and gang members knew we were there but still acted, Cobb said. So they want to take chances and risks, knowing the police are nearby. Many in attendance Wednesday, including Cobb himself, believe the best solution for reducing gun violence will come outside of law enforcement, through direct contact with perpetrators without the police around. For that to happen, local pastor Willie Comer said, community members can't be afraid of such a meeting. I've been a part of multiple times in Chicago where we've had to call a truce between two groups. But it's not called because the two groups want the truce. It's because the community wanted the truce, said Comer, executive director of the East Central Illinois Youth for Christ. So we need to call out the leaders and have a meeting and sit down to have that discussion. It has to be personal, one-on-one, and it may not last 6 months, but it'll stop shootings today. That may well be the next level of action, but Champaign Community Relations Manager Tracy Parsons expressed concern over meeting directly with members of the rival groups. I'm afraid to be talking about going to some of these folks and going in their spaces, because if you're not prepared and you're not equipped to go in, it could end badly, he said. We need a new level of understanding about the ruthlessness and the lack of concern these people have. Cobb said he'd be happy to see the violence stop one way or another. If one of you is able to love on them and get them to put down their guns, I'll be happy, Cobb said. If you have a way to relate to someone and make a change, please help us. But also recognize that I have to job in holding people accountable. Attendees also heard from Champaign resident Maurice Hayes, who served 17 years in prison on a murder charge, and said he has, over the past 7 years, worked to help young people out of jail. When dealing with gang members, Hayes advised coalition members, don't judge them without knowing the circumstances of what led them astray. Who are you to judge what they do? Instead, have compassion and lend yourself to them. Lend yourself to help. Man of the Year. He stayed in Champaign, advanced a long way. University of Illinois Community Credit Union CEO E.J. Donaghy describes Chris Harlan as intentional, measured, and responsive. Donaghy nominated the credit union's executive vice president and COO for Central Illinois Business 40 Under 40 Man of the Year Award, which Harlan will be recognized for today. Harlan, 38, learned those values growing up near Champaign Centennial Park, living in the same house all through Robeson Elementary, Jefferson Middle School, Centennial High School, and Parkland College. Seated in his office with Chicago Blackhawks and Cubs paraphernalia behind him, Harlan said that aside from wanting to be a pro athlete growing up, I always knew I wanted to be in business or some industry. That was in my head. I wanted to work at a desk and be a leader of some sort. His first job was at Kay's Merchandise Mart, where he stayed about 5 years. I really learned sales and customer service there, he said. After about a year, he was promoted to electronics department manager and learned about inventory and sales, and met his future wife, Katie, a co-worker. Harlan decided to go back to school full-time to get his degree, but continued working at the store. After graduating, Harlan owned a lawn and landscaping company, working 90-hour weeks. Among his discoveries, he hated mowing lawns, so after 3 years, he decided to pursue a career in financial services. Harlan has now been in the financial services industry about 15 years, spending five of those with Busey Bank. A friend and colleague introduced him to the book Strengths Finder. At the time, Harlan was considering leaving middle management for marketing or sales, but the book's emphasis on doing what you're good at resonated with him. "I decided to stick it out and see where it takes me," he said. "I feel challenged and fulfilled in the role I'm in now." Harlan oversees retail delivery channels, branches, marketing, and lending. A majority of UICCU employees work for him or his team. He also manages the credit union's strategic plan and planning process and is the co-founder and CEO of Campus Card Management Group, a credit union service organization. Donahue encouraged Harlan to get his MBA at the U of I. "He showed me why that was a great opportunity to take advantage of," Harlan said. "I've been really fortunate to have great bosses, people who have been able to both challenge me and give me the opportunity to fail at times, but also kind of correct myself along the way." At the time, he and Katie had a 3-year-old, a 1-year-old, and a newborn. "It was one of the most challenging times because I wanted to give my best to all aspects of my life," he said. "Each was a tremendous opportunity, and I didn't want to miss any of it. Unfortunately, you realize you can only do so much, so I tried to be present and give my best to whatever I was doing at the moment." Harlan serves on the Allerton Park and Recreation Center board, has been a Big Brother Big Sisters mentor, and ran several United Way corporate fundraising campaigns. Among his proudest acts were the role he played in founding a GoFundMe account for the family of missing Chinese scholar Yingying Zhang. He and his team spent hours offering financial counsel and management in support of the family. Urbana Schools. Olin admits to disciplinary revamp failure. Urbana School Superintendent Don Owens is owning up to poor communication in the rollout of a new discipline system that has drawn criticism from parents and staff. "I could have done a much better job with communication from start to finish," Owens said during a Wednesday appearance on WDWS, A Penny for Your Thought. Owen was singled out at last week's school board meeting in a statement by President John Dimmitt, who spoke of a board directive to the superintendent in April to slow this process down. The board warned the administration of the disruptions that would occur should this step not be taken. Dimmitt went on to say, but the process went on as if the board had not spoken. While admitting fault in communication on Wednesday, Owen also said, "In terms of being ready, we were ready the whole way for this move." Owen said the district's move to restorative practices has been going on for 2.5 years, but he called the changes made prior to the start of this school year, sparked by what officials identified as a racial disparity in the number of out-of-school suspensions, a more radical shift. The changes take discipline out of the hands of the deans and allow staff members with special training to talk to students one-on-one or in small groups. The goal is to find the root cause of a student's behavior problem and change it. And it's working, Owen insisted Wednesday. Students are now starting to say, "Hey, I don't want to see a fight. I heard this." They're now starting to identify who are the adults in the building that they can go to and say, "Hey, how can I help be a preventive voice in this system?" Owen said. That's exactly what the idea was and is. Having an adult who is there to respond to student stress, student conflict, student trauma is going to prevent conflict, is going to prevent fights, is going to make the school a more positive and safe environment for learning. University of Illinois College of Engineering. There's so much to be done. U of I taps key med school collaborator to lead the College of Engineering. A bioengineering professor at the University of Illinois, who played a key role in the development of the Carl Illinois College of Medicine, has been named Dean of the College of Engineering. Rashid Bashir, Executive Associate Dean and Chief Diversity Officer of the Medical School, will become Dean of the College of Engineering effective November 1st, pending approval by the U of I Board of Trustees. He will earn $423,500 annually. Bashir said Wednesday he was very honored and very humbled by his selection. "It's a very exciting time. I'm really looking forward to serving the College of Engineering and the campus," he said. Bashir joined the Illinois faculty in 2007 as a professor of electrical and computer engineering and now holds the Granger Distinguished Chair of Engineering. His research interests include bio-nanotechnology and applications of semiconductor fabrication to biomedical engineering, all apply to solving biomedical problems. For example, tiny biobots that could someday be used inside the human body to detect or destroy cancer cells. He has held a number of key administrative roles, including serving as the director of the Micro and Nanotechnology Laboratory and head of the Department of Bioengineering. An internationally recognized scholar, Bashir is a prolific author and holds more than 45 patents. He earned a PhD from Purdue University, working in the semiconductor industry, and held various visiting positions at Massachusetts General Hospital and Harvard Medical School before joining the U of I. Bashir has been a leader in fostering new interdisciplinary partnerships, both across campus and with other universities and private partners, U of I officials said. In 2015, he helped develop the concept for the new engineering-based medical school, which opened this fall. He hopes to continue contributing to the medical school in his new role as dean. For the College of Medicine to be successful, it will continue to need very strong support and partnership from the College of Engineering. That's what makes this College of Medicine unique, he said. I plan to stay engaged and continue to support them actively, along with many other initiatives. Bashir was also a leader in the formation of the ongoing Mayo Illinois Alliance, with the Mayo Clinic around individualized medicine, cancer, and computational genomics. And he led the formation of the Healthcare Engineering Systems Center at Illinois and the JUMP Applied Research for Community Health through Engineering and Simulation Partnership with OSF Healthcare in Peoria. Bashir wants to continue those kinds of collaborations as dean and continue the college's relentless pursuit of excellence and quality in research and education. It's going to be very important to provide the most affordable, high-quality engineering education to the state of Illinois, he said, and build a diverse faculty and student body and promote an inclusive environment in the college. Bashir said the academic leadership is about service, about giving back and making others successful. He said he's looking forward to working with department heads, faculty, staff members, and students to continue to address grand challenges in engineering and beyond. There's so much to be done, he said. Provost Andreas Kangalaris, who was engineering dean before being promoted to provost last year, recommended Bashir's appointment to Chancellor Robert Jones after a national search that began last spring. Engineering professor Tamer Bassar, director of the Campus Center for Advanced Study, has been serving as interim dean. Professor Bashir is a visionary scholar with a proven record of success in academic leadership roles here at Illinois, Kangalaris said in a release. He recognizes that a world-class College of Engineering requires sustained success in recruiting and retaining the very best faculty to contribute to its land-grant mission of providing accessible education, scholarly excellence, groundbreaking discoveries, and innovation, he said. The Health Reporter is in. Now that the FDA has approved the HPV vaccine for older ages, should adults who never had this vaccination consider getting it now? Yes, but this is a very recent development, so check with your health insurer first to see if your vaccination will be covered, advised Katie Scheiding, a nurse practitioner in Christie Clinic's Obstetrics and Gynecology Department. The expanded age range for use of the vaccine, Gardasil 9, to now include women and men ages 27 to 45, was just approved by the Food and Drug Administration last week. Gardasil 9 is a vaccine intended to protect against the most serious types of human papillomavirus, or HPV. It had variously been indicated only for kids and adults ages 9 to 26 to help prevent cervical, vulvar, vaginal, and anal cancers and genital warts caused by the 9 HPV types. Gardasil 9 replaced an earlier version of the vaccine, approved in 2006, that protected against 4 HPV types. HPV is a common infection that most sexually active people get at some point. There are more than 200 types of this virus, 40 of which are easily spread through sexual contact. Most don't lead to disease and clear on their own, but some linger and can develop into cancer or warts. Parents have long been advised to keep their kids vaccinated against HPV before they become sexually active and have the potential to become infected, because that's when the vaccine can be most effective. But research involving about 3,200 women ages 27 to 45 found the vaccine was 88% effective in preventing persistent infection, genital warts, vulvar and vaginal precancerous lesions, cervical precancerous lesions, and cervical cancer related to the HPV types it covered, according to the FDA. The effectiveness for men ages 27 to 45 was inferred from the data for women. Data about Gardasil use in younger men and a clinical trial involving 150 men ages 27 to 45, the FDA said. Scheiding said she's seen adults in her practice who could potentially benefit from HPV vaccination. For example, people who are newly divorced and becoming sexually active again with new partners. While many unvaccinated adults may have already been infected by HPV, it may not have been one of the serious disease-causing types the vaccine helps prevent, she said. In fact, two of the HPV types covered in the vaccine are responsible for 70% of cervical cancer, she said. It's important to note that groups such as the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecologists haven't yet updated their own guidelines with respect to what ages are appropriate for Gardasil 9, Scheiding said. Insurers will likely wait for these groups to do their own reviews and see if the guidelines change. I think a lot is yet to be seen, she said. I would anticipate for insurance companies to wait and see. Protective measures. Villagers asked to help prevent spread of West Nile virus. Village officials are again spraying for mosquitoes and are asking Tolono residents to do their part after one person became ill with West Nile virus. The village first alerted residents through its website and social media this week. Mayor Rob Murphy later told News Gazette Media that the person's condition is improving, but he could not share other details. This is the first human West Nile case in Champaign County in 2018, according to the Illinois Department of Public Health website. In all, there have been 103 human cases of West Nile virus this season. Nearly half have been in Cook County, but a few other East Central Illinois counties, Coles, Edgar, and Ford, have each had one human case this season too, according to IDPH. Since West Nile is spread to people by infected mosquitoes, health officials urge getting rid of standing water sources around the home that can be mosquito breeding areas, checking window and door screens for holes, and covering up and using insect repellent outdoors. Most people who become infected with West Nile virus don't develop symptoms. Those that do can develop fever, headache, and body aches. We have Jim Dye's column. Pritzker has no silver tongue, but it doesn't matter. J.B. Pritzker, Illinois governor in waiting, if the public opinion polls are correct, loves to talk about all the things he's going to do with the increased revenues from the state income tax increases he plans to pass into law. There'll be more money for all the social programs he supports. People will enjoy a state version of the federal Obamacare program, and there will be lots more spending on pre-K and K-12 public schools, as well as public universities. Indeed, there will be so much money coming in from his proposed tax increases, the Democratic candidates insist that there will be plenty left over. Pritzker promises that a vast majority of middle-class earners and those who aspire to move up from poverty to join the middle class will get a state income tax cut. What he doesn't want to talk about is who, beyond super wealthy people like himself and Republican incumbent Governor Bruce Rauner, will pay more. Pritzker won't talk about the higher tax rate he wants when he urges the General Assembly to increase the current 4.95% flat rate. Neither will he discuss the rates he'd like to see when and if Illinois voters pass in 2020 his proposed tax state constitutional amendment, replacing the current flat tax mandate with a progressive income tax. Pritzker has been dodging that issue for weeks now, contending that he can only talk specifics after he's sworn in as governor and meets with Democratic legislative leaders like House Speaker Michael Madigan and Senate President John Cullerton. This week, Pritzker put another touchy subject off limits. Reporters noting that Pritzker has promised tax cuts for the vast majority of middle-income families in Illinois asked the candidate to explain what he means by middle income. In other words, what income categories constitute middle income? $40,000 for a single person, $100,000 for a couple, $250,000 for a family of four? Just who is going to get the tax cut Pritzker promises? More important, who is going to get whacked by the Pritzker tax plan? That subject came up this week at a Chicago Sun-Times debate between Pritzker and Rauner. Rauner defined a middle-class income as between $50,000 and $200,000 for a family of three in Chicagoland. Pritzker, according to media reports, dodged the question. After the debate, however, Pritzker was approached by reporters who asked the same question. It set off this tragicomic exchange between reporters seeking an answer and a candidate responding to but not answering a question. First, Pritzker answered a question that wasn't answered. He misinterpreted, almost if certainly on purpose, the question as one about the proposed progressive rates he won't discuss instead of what it really was, a legitimate inquiry about his personal opinion on the parameters of a middle-class income, something else he won't discuss. Reporter, why can't you answer the question about middle-class income? What do you believe middle-class income is? Pritzker, well, again, I've told you that it's important that we negotiate this with the people's representatives. Reporter, no, I'm not asking about the graduated tax rate. Pritzker persisted in his intentional misinterpretation of the question. Pritzker, it doesn't matter. Reporter, what does someone make who is middle? Pritzker, but it doesn't matter. What does matter is that we're going to have to negotiate this with the legislature, and it's going to have to go to a referendum of the people of Illinois. The reporter, trying to straighten out the subject of the question, then pointed out Rauner's definition of a middle-class income and again asked Pritzker for this. Reporter, Governor said $50,000 to $200,000. Pritzker aide, thank you. The words thank you by a Pritzker aide were intended to signal the questioning of Pritzker was over, but reporters ignored the aide, prompting Pritzker to attempt to end the questioning with his own decree that the session was over. Reporter, what does someone who make who is middle class? Pritzker, thank you very much. Reporter, what does someone make who is middle class? Pritzker, well, we talked a little bit about that today. Pritzker, you didn't answer it. Pritzker, thank you. Reporter, why is that difficult? If one thing is clear about this election, beyond the polling data that indicates an easy win for Pritzker, is that the Democratic candidate will not fold under questioning. From his perspective, it's easy to understand. He views the election as all but over. He's in like Flynn. Answering tough questions can only complicate his ascension to the throne. How safe is he? So safe that being implicated in a $330,000 property tax fraud scheme, so far at least, hasn't tarnished his image in the eyes of the voters. He doesn't want to, and for the most part won't, talk about that either. This has been Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, October 11th, 2018. Please stay tuned for Part 2.